You are watching Game Time Decisions. I am Gabriel Morenci. Welcome to the program that puts its money where its fantasies are on the Fantasy Sports Network. As the National Football League regular season rapidly approaches, we break it down. Steve Merrill joins us. We discuss the revamped Dallas Cowboys Super Bowl odds, NFC's division odds, Rookie of the Year odds. Rookie of the Year odds really got shuffled over the weekend. Steve Merrill will break it down with us. Tony Cincotta. Tony Cincotta will join us on the program. He's got the Tony thing going on his Twitter. Tony Cincotta will join us, Roto expert, Fantasy Sports Network's very own. We'll break down the Romo and the Cowboys situation from a fantasy standpoint. It's a trickle-down effect, right? Now we're going to break down Elliott. What does this mean for Elliott? What does it mean for Dez Bryant? What does it mean for Jason Witten? And I tell you what, Jason Witten is a forgotten man, flying under the radar right now, and I think that safety valve might be pretty attractive to Dak Prescott. So we're going to break that down. There's another quarterback in the news right now, Colin Kaepernick. Colin Kaepernick refused to stand for the national anthem over the weekend. All hell breaks loose. People are outraged. As, of course, you know, Colin Kaepernick is lucky to be in the NFL. Yeah, he's lucky. He went to the store and he bought a lottery ticket. And, oh, look, I bought a lottery ticket. I didn't do anything. And now I'm in the NFL. Yeah, he's lucky to be in the NFL. He didn't work to get to the NFL, right? You know. But we'll break that down. Robert Littell, blacksportsonline.com. Great website. BSO, baby. He's going to step up and join us. We've got a ton of baseball picks for you, as well as the pennant chase getting interesting. And pretty much like half the games tonight are all key games. Pretty cool. So we're going to break that down with Steve Merrill. We've got a bunch of baseball picks for you. But it's amazing, isn't it? I believe it was like 3 weeks ago to the day almost that I stood in this exact spot and told you that the Dak Prescott era was set to begin. That it was as eminent as Lindsay Lohan. I remember, I said Lindsay Lohan. I use the same analogies. I've been doing this a long time. I use Lindsay. I said it's eminent as Lindsay Lohan falling off the wagon and going on a bender. Well, I guess somebody chopped their breakfast on a mirror. I should have, poor Lindsay, I'll leave Lindsay alone. I should have said it's as eminent as Anthony Weiner flashing his junk to somebody online. And yeah, real classy, Anthony, the fact that your kid was next to you. You know, even Woody Allen thinks that's creepy. But nevertheless, I told you the Dak Prescott era was set to begin. I didn't think it was going to begin this soon, but sure would be shocked. Tony Romo. Tony Romo's 36 years old, man. The dude's brittle. It's just the cold reality. I'd feel sorry for the guy, but the dude's like slept with a bunch of hot chicks and he's got like $100 million. So I ain't feeling sorry for you. It is what it is. Speaking of lucky, you had a good run in the National Football League. Is it over right now? I don't know. I don't think so. I think Romo actually will be back. But let's forget about the arguments, whether it was a dirty hit or not. If Tony Romo can't get through sliding in a preseason game, he ain't getting through the regular season. And I had a bad feeling about Romo's health coming into this year. That's why I did the monologue that I did 3 weeks ago. I told you, Dak Prescott, 23 years old. Dak Prescott isn't like a guy that left college after a couple of years. Dak Prescott was there for 4 years. This guy played in games for 4 years. He started, you know, for like 3 years. You know, this guy is an experienced quarterback that played in the fastest conference in football in the SEC. He's playing against all these badasses. Reggie Ragland, oh, Reggie Ragland's amazing. Whatever, Dak Prescott played against Reggie Ragland, you know? He plays against these guys. And he's incredibly smart as well. He believes he's the smartest quarterback coming into the draft. He said when NFL teams were showing him the terminology during meetings, he knew every single play. He is prepared. He has a great supporting cast around him. He's got the best offensive line in football. He's got Ezekiel Elliott running the football. He can just throw it up there to Dez Bryant, and it's going to be fine. This isn't Matt Castle. This isn't Kellen Moore. This isn't Brandon freaking Whedon, who sucks even in a preseason game, all right? Dak Prescott, you know, might not be a first overall pick, but it's ironic, isn't it? We live in an era in which quarterbacks, you get drafted early, you're supposed to produce early. You know, Geno Smith, E.J. Manuel, after 2 years, you guys are done. It's over. We're moving on. You're a bust. And it's ironic. Jared Goff, nowhere near ready to be playing in the NFL right now. Carson Wentz, nowhere near ready to be playing in the NFL. Paxton Lynch couldn't win a starting job over Trevor Siemian. It's ironic. Here it is, Dak Prescott. Who was wrong? Maybe Mel Kiper was wrong. Maybe Dak Prescott's better than Jared Goff. The point is, they're all rolling the dice when it comes to quarterback play. But the Dallas Cowboys got a damn good one. And the sky isn't falling right now. And as a gambling man, I'll tell you, there's going to be even more value right now betting on the Pokes than with Prescott than there was with Romo. Case in point, Cowboys were laying 4.5 points against the Giants. Suddenly, the game's a pick'em. Cowboys can win this game. Cowboys can win this game with Dak Prescott. Russell Wilson wasn't an experienced quarterback. Tom Brady wasn't an experienced quarterback. I remember when Dick Vermeil, he lost Trent Green. Oh, no, the sky is falling. Who the hell is Kurt Warner? Kurt Warner's a Hall of Famer. That's who the hell Kurt Warner is. The bottom line is sometimes changes in our lives need to be forced upon us. We're all scared of change. Changes need to be forced upon us. And the Dallas Cowboys just went from an aging, overhyped football team led by Tony Romo, Dez Bryant, and Jason Witten to a young, fresh football team that could still win the division this year. And, oh, yeah, they happen to have both the Rookie of the Year favorite and the co-Rookie of the Year favorite, according to the odds makers. Normally, this time of the year, I'm telling you, don't believe the hype around the Dallas Cowboys. It's fabricated. This year, I stand here and tell you, believe the hype. It's real. Game Time Decisions on the Fantasy Sports Network continues. Game Time Decisions live on the Fantasy Sports Network. All right, there's a ton of stuff to get to. Robert Littell, Black Sports Online, is going to join us. Tony Cincata is going to join us. Roto Experts, we're going to talk some cowboy fantasy perspective. How does this affect everybody else on the Pokes? But let's bring in Steve Merrill right now, covers experts, prosportsinfo.com, to talk about the Romo Prescott situation from a gaming perspective. And let's look at all the refreshed numbers. Steve, always a pleasure. How you doing?
Hey, Gabe, doing well. I almost feel like we kind of jinxed the Cowboys. We were, you know, saying the other week that now that they have a capable backup, Tony Romo will stay healthy the whole season. We kind of laughed about it, but a little eerie Saturday when the news came out.
But you and I jinx things more than any other guest, Steve, I swear. Like, it's always
both
Mondays
ways,
and Fridays.
Good and bad. Good and bad. We were pretty good on the NASCAR again, by the way.
No, we're good with the NASCAR, but I'm saying we do have a way of jinxing people. I know I do.
The other sports.
And it always happens. And tonight we got Straley from the Reds that we're going to talk about. Maybe the Morenci Black Cloud affects Dan Straley, but we'll get to that in a minute. So, hey, Romo's out. it's not shocking, but it's amazing that here it is, just like the season hasn't even started yet. People are bitching about whether the hit was cheap or not. Averill's hit, I don't think it was. And if you can't get through that, then you're in a lot of trouble with the regular season. Romo's 36 years old right now. Cowboys were 3-1 last year with Romo. They were 1-11 without him, Steve.
Yeah. No, exactly. I mean, it's hard to candy coat those numbers, you know? You can't really paint a rosy picture. They were a god-awful football team without Romo last year. They had no capable backup. Now, the question becomes, is Zach Prescott a capable backup now? He's looked pretty good in the preseason. And, you know, these mobile quarterbacks sometimes, as we saw with RG3, they can have a pretty good first season. So I think he could help them this year. I'm not sure he'll be the answer in years to come. But, yeah, I think they'll be a better team this year at the quarterback situation. But it's still a loss. Romo would still have been their best option. However, he's only out for half a season, maybe, at a minimum a half a season. But that's a lot better than missing 12 out of 16 like last year. So that's another thing we got to keep in mind.
Yeah, you know, if you look at it's a good point that you raised. If you look at Dak Prescott, I remember RG3 in his rookie year. He was fast enough that when things broke down, he could roll out, he could buy time, or he could run for it. They can't get Dak hurt, but at the same point in time, he will be able to run for first downs when things break down. But he's not, he's far more polished than a lot of people give him credit for. He was in college for 4 years. He's a very smart kid. He understands the playbook. He's very poised. You know, he lost his mother when he was like 20, 21. I remember when it happened. He sucked it up. He didn't miss any games. Like, he's a tough mental, he's like mentally tough, this kid. He expects to succeed. I think the surrounding cast around him is good enough that they can get through this. And I actually think suddenly there's a little bit of value betting on the Cowboys now, as opposed to the sky is falling.
Yeah, there's a lot of uncertainty, but there definitely could be some value. And there's a lot of things I do agree with you on Prescott that I like. And I thought you brought up a good point about his intelligence. I think he has his head on his shoulders better than maybe any NFL quarterback that's come out this year as a rookie. And that's a really important thing. You obviously have to have talent, but he has the athletic ability to both on the ground and through the air, and also have his head on his shoulders is pretty big at this level, because you have to make decisions quickly and you have to lead the team even as a rookie. I think this is going to be exciting. I mean, they obviously have an opportunity here, and they also have some other offensive weapons, don't forget. You know, this was one of the best teams in the NFL 2 years ago. They should have won that playoff game in Green Bay a couple years back. And if not for the Romo injuries last year, you know, they probably were a playoff team again. So they have some talent on this roster.
Yeah, I was watching a preseason game the other day, Steve. I was watching them all, but I was watching a game, and they still don't know what a catch is. It's so frustrating. Like, is the year starting? So frustrating. There's been, like, same crap as always. You know, I thought you raised something interesting, too, especially in a shortened situation. It's sort of like a pitcher, Steve, right, with baseball. People always think, oh, no, the kid's making his first start. He's coming up from AAA or AA. He's making his first start. He could be in trouble. It's almost the opposite. People don't know anything about him. I mean, the kid's throwing 96 or whatever. You don't know what you don't know what's coming next. And then we see pitchers, they'll regress maybe 2 months in once the guys around the league have seen him a couple of times and they start to figure out what he's about. Very similar situation with Dak. You know, if you only play 6 or 7 games, they can manage that. And there's not really a book on this guy. No one really knows what the Cowboys are going to do right now. I expect they're going to run the ball a lot. They used to milk the clock anyways, even when Romo was there. That Garrett likes to do that. But amazing, Steve. The Cowboys were 4.5-point favorites against the Giants in the opener. Now it's a pick 'em. The game is a pick 'em, a 4.5-point swing, total 47.
I think there's no question that Tony Romo is worth 3 to 4 points, you know, compared to the options last year. He was worth more than that last year. To an average quarterback, he's probably worth 3 to 4 points. But the question becomes, you know, is Dak Prescott just an average backup quarterback now? He's looked pretty good, and there's just so much uncertainty there that I would err on the side of thinking there's a little bit of value with Dallas now as well. And I agree with what you said about, you know, the uncertainty. And that's another reason we often see that sophomore slump with a lot of these NFL quarterbacks, is that the league has an offseason to get a book on him, to get a read on him. We definitely saw that with RG3. He has not been the same since his rookie season in Washington. I think back to that Cincinnati game, I think it was, when they came out in the second half and just started pounding him that year when they were running the option every play. And he's really never been the same since that game. It'll be interesting to see if teams get a read on Prescott, but the divisional teams will only probably face him once if Romo does come back in the second half of the season.
Not to mention he's got probably the best offensive line in football protecting him as well. So he's not going to be running for his life. In the preseason, he was successful. I think what we can take, Steve, is he played the first half last week. Romo got hurt right away. So he played the first half last week against the Seattle starters. And, yeah, you know, maybe they weren't blitzing like they normally would. But nevertheless, it was a Thursday night game. Seattle were fired up. Russell Wilson and the starters played the first half. It was a competitive game. And the game was tied 10-10 at the half. And Dak was 17-23 for 116 yards in the first half. So I think that's almost sort of more realistic to what the kid can do. As far as the division is concerned, for the record, you guys know, I picked the Washington Redskins to win the division at plus 300. I will be honest with you. I don't like what I've seen from the Redskins very much in the preseason, but I'm not going to overreact. As far as that concerned, Gruden really doesn't seem to care that much about the preseason. But adjusted numbers, the Redskins now plus 275. And the Cowboys used to be plus 180, Steve. Now the Giants are favored to win the division at plus 220. Cowboys are the second choice at plus 225. And I'm not buying into the Giants so much. Everyone thinks, ooh, the Giants. I don't see it.
Yeah, their season wins is around 8.5. And this is a team that went 6-10 last year. And I don't see how they fixed really any of their problems to all of a sudden have to win 3 games more this year in a very competitive division. The Redskins make me a little nervous just because in the modern-day NFL, it's very hard for teams to win back-to-back seasons, especially mediocre teams.
And you know what, Steve? The Redskins haven't made the playoffs in back-to-back years since 91-92. You're a skin guy. I don't got to tell you that.
Yeah, and as you know, Gabe, also, you know, about half the teams in the NFL don't make the playoffs the next season. They make it the year before. And if there's ever a team that kind of, you know, was maybe a mediocre team last year that made the playoffs, it was the Redskins. And one of the reasons that happens is because of the schedule. The way they do the top-heavy schedules now for these division winners is they don't do them any favors. They have to play a lot of big boys out of conference and within the conference, you know, the non-division games. So this is a wide-open division, and the Eagles are still dangerous as well. I mean, this is an Eagles team that has vastly underachieved the last few seasons. I think Dallas still could be the team to beat here. Obviously, a lot of uncertainty, But if Prescott plays up to his ability and for what we've seen so far, I think Dallas is by far the most talented team still in the NFC East.
You know what, Steve, though? Everything's going to be judged by that one game against the Giants, man. We're going to be on a Monday. Oh, my God. Oh, the Cowboys, we should have jumped on them. They won 37-17. Prescott's amazing. Or if Prescott looks bad and they lose, people are going to be like, oh, the Cowboys are screwed. Like,
But you also see in week one how the NFL games in week one never have anything to do with the rest of the season. So you almost want the opposite. If they look terrible, that's a good sign maybe. Who knows?
It's a good point. All right, so how about this? The Dallas Cowboys, and I said this off the top, coming into the year, Steve, the Cowboys – before the draft and just the Cowboy organization, sort of like an old team. You know, Romo, Bryant, Witten. You know, same guys every year, get hurt every year, you never win every year, same thing. You guys, and every year, same thing. Oh, the Cowboys, the Cowboys, the Cowboys. Bad defense, overly hyped, same crap team every year, same team. You know, but the expectations are always really high. Suddenly, they're a young-ass team here, Steve, and yeah, they're so young, in fact. Ezekiel Elliott is the Rookie of the Year favorite. Even money, minus 110. Dak Prescott was listed, I didn't see it, but I heard sportsbook.com had it out there, 300-1 a couple of weeks ago. Now he's plus 350. Jared Goff is 7-1. He's not even starting. He's not winning Rookie of the Year. I mean, he might not even play this year. Jared Goff, you know, not winning. Corey Coleman, wide receiver, is the fourth choice. I don't see that either. They got Gordon coming in. They got other weapons. It's not like Coleman's lighting it up at camp and turning heads. He's been okay. I'm not buying into this with Coleman, which leads me to the Redskins and Josh Doctson at 14-1. You're getting the best wide receiver in the draft. He hasn't played in the preseason. Gruden says that it doesn't matter, that he's going to play in the first game. He's that good. He's ready to go type of thing in the Monday nighter. Doctson at 14-1 might be worth a long shot, but you know what? It looks like Elliott is the hands-on favorite for a reason. I don't like any of these other rookies to win besides Dak, and Dak won't play enough games most likely. I think Josh Doctson at 14-1 is a live shot here for Rookie of the Year.
Yeah, one thing I like about Elliott is that offensive line that you mentioned with Dallas, because that is a really strong offensive line. You know, it's amazing that they weren't able to play better last year without Romo with such a good O-line still. That's just how bad the backup quarterback situation was in Dallas last year.
Well, you can give the quarterback 10 seconds, but if he can't throw it accurately, yeah, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, I mean, I really feel like the backups, the options they had last year were that bad. I think Prescott is a huge step up. And Ezekiel Elliott, you know, obviously he's got talent. I think most running backs in this league, other than maybe like Adrian Peterson in his prime, and I'm not sure he's still in his prime, but there's only a handful, maybe two or three guys a season that really I think are that great. I think most running backs are a dime a dozen. I think most of them depend on the offensive line and the system they're in. You look at the Denver Broncos back during their Super Bowl runs with three different running backs, three different Super Bowls, you know. So I think Elliott is more than capable of having a huge season with that offensive line. And you throw in the fact that they probably need to be conservative with a young quarterback for the first half of the season. I think he makes a lot of sense even at that low price.
Yeah, we should note that McFadden rushed for over 1,000 yards last year, and he's always hurt, and he's not that good.
It's plug and play. I mean, it really is. And I'll tell you, Gabe, the wide receivers are kind of the same way. Other than these freaks of nature like Calvin Johnson that are just man among boys, basically, the way the rules are set up now in the modern NFL, I mean, most receivers are replaceable. Look at the New England Patriots. They're the best example. Other than Gronkowski, I mean, he's not even a receiver. He's a tight end. I mean, what receivers and running backs have they had that are really superstars over the last decade?
They just plug in.
Tom Brady gets on the ball quickly.
Various white guy, Amendola, Welker. Now they got Chris Hogan.
Exactly. So, I mean, most of these receivers and running backs are all dimes a dozen as far as I'm concerned.
All right, we've only got about 2 minutes here, Steve. We got four baseball games, so let's blast through them. Jays and Orioles, big game, division game. These games are all big at this time of the year. Jays are hot, looking to run Baltimore to the ground. Estrada and Miley on a hill. Both have been hit recently. Miley 1-2, 8.18 ERA, 5 starts with the Orioles. Jays lead the season series 7-6. Jays road favorites.
Yeah, you know, I always talk about when these teams play earlier this season, the top two home run hitting teams at one point, you know, and Baltimore still leads the league in home runs. Always a lot of power potential here, so the over always worth a look for that reason.
Marlins and Mets. I don't know about the over in this one. In fact, I like the under. Fernandez, we know he's like 27-2 at home, But they're 7-1 to the under in their last eight games as a whole, the Marlins. Everyone's hurt on offense, but they get great pitching. And we talked about unknown pitchers. Montero gets the call up from the minors. They're sort of rolling the dice here. He's pitched in the bigs before, but he hasn't pitched in a while in the bigs. And I don't know. I think the guy can give us five innings of decent baseball. Marlins' bats are kind of weak. I like the under.
Yeah, this game's sitting on that key number of 7 of the overs. You're getting under 7, even money. Very tough not to play the under in Met games this year. They've had great pitching, but their offense has been just god-awful.
Yankees and Royals, two teams. I tell you, man, Gary Sanchez mania taking over the Bronx. Yankees only 3.5 games out, man. It's very, very interesting. The Yankees are 3.5 out. The Royals have just turned things around. 12-2 in their last 14, 8-1 their last 9 at home. Kansas City played 22 of their final 32 games at home as well. It's amazing. On August the 6th, there were 7 games under 500, and now they're only 3.5 games out of a wild card. Yankees are still lingering right now. Thing that can, I like the Royals, a home dog, but the Royals are 1-6 the last 7 times he's been on the bump.
Yeah, and you worry a little bit about the turnaround, having to play in Boston for the Sunday night game, a big 10-4 win last night as a dog now traveling home. I had the over last night for my clients as a best bet. You know, I mentioned earlier this year at Kansas City, they were a very injured offensive team, but they were underachieving for that reason. Looks like they're finally playing up to their World Series champion potential.
All right, and finally in closing here, the Reds, plus 135. I never thought I'd be taking the Reds here tonight. Here's the, you know, we're going to curse them. The Reds are 8-0 in Straley's last 8 starts. He's got 18 strikeouts in the last 17 innings. He's 6-0 in his last 7 starts. He hasn't lost. Dan Straley hasn't lost a decision since July the 8th. Shoemaker on the hill for the Halos. What do you make of this one?
You know, the Angels have been a vast underachiever this season, but if you look at expected one-loss record, which is based on runs scored and allowed, they've been closer to a 500 team than a 56-74 team. So I actually feel like there might be a little bit of value with the Angels here over the final month.
All right. Steve Merrill, ProSportsInfo.com. Always a pleasure, Steve.
Thanks, Gabe.
There's Steve Merrill with us. We take a quick break. We'll continue talking some football, actually. Dallas Cowboy football from a fantasy perspective. I've got a draft tonight, and I'm sure you've got drafts rapidly approaching. Those of you that already drafted, well, that's why you got to wait. The Tony Cincotta joins me next. Game Time Decisions on the Fantasy Sports Network continues. All right, we're fired up. We're now joined by a man who we had a couple of drinks with last week at Rockin' Riley's on 35th in Manhattan. If you're ever taking an event at MSG, make sure to make your way over to the Renaissance Hotel. We bring in, as I stated, not Tony Cincotta, but it's like Ohio State, right? No, it's not Ohio State, the Ohio State. The Tony Cincotta joins us. And looks like Tony's sitting down. He's like Colin Kaepernick. He's refusing to stand up for the show. What's up, Tony?
Oh, you know, it's interesting. Your room was occupied by Beyonce. The Video Music Awards were in Madison Square Garden, and they were all here. So if you came this week, you could have saw Beyonce.
Wow, that bar must have been popping, man, Rockin' Riley's.
It was, with some incredibly poor music.
Yeah, incredibly poor music and a lot of big booty.
Absolutely.
All right. So good to catch up with you, Tony. So let's talk the Dallas Cowboys, man, and the fantasy effect. I just broke it down from a gambling effect, and I actually think there's value on the Cowboys now, even more so than it was with Romo. When Romo's there, the Cowboys are sort of always overhyped. He's a very good quarterback, and they do win with him, but their point spreads are overhyped. A good example is they were 4.5-point favorites against the Giants, Tony, in the season opener. Now the game's a pick 'em. I went from, for sure, taking the plus 4.5 with the Giants to now with Dak Prescott, game's a pick 'em. I think the Cowboys can win this game. Before we get into the fantasy aspect, what do you think of the Cowboys with Dak Prescott at their quarterback as far as just the football team winning games? Not fantasy, but how do you think the Cowboys do?
I think they're going to run the ball 25 to 30 times or have a controlled passing game with Tony Romo there and then stretch the field with Dez Bryant occasionally. Dez Bryant will still get the 10 to 12 touchdowns, but I think as a team, the Dallas Cowboys' weakness hasn't changed. This was a poor defense, right?
Yeah.
Then all the suspensions and all the injuries had me worried, but the Giants' offense was so poor in preseason. I think it has a lot of people scared off, but if you look at Eli Manning historically through preseason, they've always been terrible. I think they come out and they trounce the Cowboys opening day.
Wow, they come out and trounce them. You know, one thing, it's a good point you raised as far as Dak, and I was going to bring this up, actually, because I think Dak is going to be fine, but you're right. They're going to play a ball control offense. Yep. They're going to milk the play clock down to one. They're going to run the ball, try to play ball possession. But you're right, that defense is a problem. And if Romo's there, the Cowboys get into a lot of shootouts, you know, 30-27 style football games this year. It's going to be a problem for them if they fall behind, isn't it, Tony? Like, if they're down 14-0 early, this is when Prescott could have a problem. If they're up 7-3 and they're handing the ball off and they're defending, they're playing ball control, he's going to be fine. You know, they could have problems if the Cowboys are down and they got to sort of take them out of their element.
Yeah, that's going to be the problem with any young quarterback. I think whenever the game's close, they're going to have the opportunity to hand off to Ezekiel Elliott, set up play action pass, and throw the ball to Dez Bryant, one-on-one coverage or double coverage on the outside there. Then they get behind, and then all of a sudden they drop back in a nickel. That's going to be the problem. All of a sudden there's all these defensive backs out there, limited pass rush, and then he's going to have to make plays. Dak Prescott will gain a lot of yards rushing this year, which will be great for fantasy owners, but probably not that great as far as betting on the Dallas Cowboys.
Well, you know what? He rushed for 986 yards 2 years ago in college. Last year, he rushed a little less. They wanted him to throw more. He completed 66% of his passes. The preseason wasn't a fluke. He is good. Oh. He is good, and he's a smart kid. He understands, like, the speed's not too fast coming out of the SEC. Now, it's amazing, Tony. He rushed for 522 yards in a preseason so far. It's amazing. In three games?
It's absolutely crazy. The two best quarterbacks I saw playing college football last year were Prescott and Trevor Boykin. Yeah. Those two guys that put up numbers consistently from a fantasy standpoint. Now, Boykin's behind Russell Wilson, so we'll forget about him, but Prescott's going to get an opportunity. I had a Dallas reporter on my SiriusXM show today. He said, hey, for whatever reason, say Dallas starts out 6-0, will they go with Dak Prescott? He says, no, they go back to Tony Romo. I don't believe that for a second. This guy has a shot to win a job here in Dallas.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see. I don't think they're going to throw Romo under the bus immediately. But you know, your great point as far as Boykin is concerned, I brought him up. I said last year in college, just to be ahead of everybody, I tweeted out, I remember during the game, I said, Trayvon Boykin equal Tyrod Taylor. That's right. He's Tyrod Taylor. That's who he is. He's a new Tyrod Taylor type. He may be a little small, but you see he's making people look stupid in the preseason, running around. He's got that it factor about him. He's a winner. Yeah, they got a steal there. It's amazing, isn't it? A six-round draft pick, Tony, because he punched a security guard and pushed a cop a couple of nights before the bowl game. So people have soured on him a little bit from a mental aspect, psychological aspect. But it's amazing. You got Prescott, fourth-rounder. Boykin was a throwaway late in the draft. And both much more solid. Jared Goff, Jared Goff. I mean, this kid, he's got real problems, man. Like he's not even as good as Sean Mannion is. He's like third on the depth chart.
No, we see it time and time again. Quarterbacks a lot like running backs, going later in the draft, getting an opportunity to play, and it's hard to pick out these guys. Now, Boykin's interesting because 20 years ago, he would have been drafted in the first round by the Oakland Raiders based on what he did in college. But now everybody's going to be politically correct, and they didn't go that route. And it's huge with Tyrod Taylor, your comparisons there. This is a kid that only threw 20 touchdown passes last year. In the NFL, they look at those numbers and they say, oh, man, how good can he be? Well, 20 touchdowns, but he had 560 yards rushing. From a fantasy standpoint, that adds 10 more touchdowns, plus four rushing touchdowns. Now we're up to 34 touchdowns. That puts him right there with guys like Carson Palmer and Phillip Rivers. Tyrod Taylor is being slept on. And he's going to be a great quarterback this year, I think, in his second year. And here's the thing. He's got no wide receivers other than Sammy Watkins. This kid can play, too.
What do you think about Prescott? I'm sure there'll be a Cowboy fan that'll force him in there and then end up taking him. But, and I like him. But even as much as I like him, is he worthy of drafting, or is he a plug-in on, like, DraftKings or something?
Well, DraftKings, the first week, the millionaire maker, the prices already came out. so he's only $5,000, the minimum salary. He's going to be owned 40%. I'm going to do the opposite. So he's going to be owned because he's so cheap. I'm going to go with Aaron Rodgers, the highest priced quarterback at Jacksonville, $8,600. Because of the Prescott situation, he'll be owned 5 to 7%. So I'm going to go the other way there. I think people.
I'm such a public monkey, Tony. I earned $5,000. I want to run to the computer. Oh my God, he's got $5,000. Oh, he can throw two touch. Oh, you know, man, he's going to be owned by 50%, Tony. People are going to be like, oh, I'm taking Prescott, man, $5,000.
He definitely could be. I put six teams together as soon as the news came out yesterday. I put him on two of the teams. Three of the teams have Aaron Rodgers, and I think I have Matthew Stafford, who's another guy I like in that Detroit offense. That's a cheap salary.
So what about, though, from drafting him in a league? Stay away from Prescott?
If you draft two quarterbacks in your leagues, keep him as your second quarterback.
What about drafting him and Romo, then?
I wouldn't draft him and Romo. I'd be afraid of that. The one thing that I could say is that the throws could get up because of the defense, but I'm worried about them protecting him and only having 20 passes a game. In today's NFL, that's a killer with the number of passes. We could have guys throwing 40 times a game nowadays.
I know. Okay, so Dez Bryant, how much does this hurt him? Obviously not like last year where he fell to three touchdowns, right? Three straight years at 12 or more. Falls to three last year, but yeah, he was hurt. Only caught 31 balls. I don't even know why he came back with the clowns that were playing quarterback for him. He's had two touchdowns from Dak in the preseason, man. And Dak sort of throws it up high. Dez goes, gets it. And Dez said, no, this kid's special. This isn't just like, I like him. Like, they're buddies type of thing. Dez, so it's better than Dez giving Brandon Whedon dirty looks in the locker room after throwing his helmet on the sidelines. He likes Dak. He'll understand the problems that come along. What about Dez? How much does he drop now?
He doesn't drop at all in my mind.
Really?
If you go back to 2014 when DeMarco Murray ran for 1,800 yards, we still had 16 touchdowns from Dez Bryant. I think we're going to go back to that way. Dak Prescott gets it. Let players make plays. Throw the ball up. You're going to get some interceptions. You're going to get some bad plays. But you're going to get more big plays than not from Dez Bryant. I think it's a good thing. And I think it's unchanged. I would still pick him at the end of the first round. Ezekiel Elliott still will go in the first round from 8 to 10. I don't think it changes any of the Dallas Cowboys.
I agree with you. We see that with Tyrod. They figured it out with Tyrod and Sammy Watkins. Even if he's double teamed, just throw him the damn ball. He'll get it. Don't worry. If once in a while he gets picked, it's like a punt. It's a bomb anyways.
Yeah, Brett Favre's in the Hall of Fame with all those interceptions. Keep throwing the ball.
Yeah, exactly. All right, so you mentioned Elliott 8 to 10. You don't think Elliott climbs right now, because we can argue both sides here. Okay, he was already going to get the ball 20, 25 times, I think. They were going to run the ball a lot, 18 times, whatever. He was going to run the ball a lot. Now they're going to play even more of a ball control, I think. So you could argue that he's going to get the ball a ton. Or you could argue that his life just became more difficult because the opposing team are going to be able to play the run and stack the box more. But if they stack the box more, they're going to get burnt by Prescott. Prescott's going to roll around. He's going to dink it right over them and hit Witten and stuff for these little outlets. So it could be a problem for them. But so you don't think Elliott goes up because of this, not down or up? Same for Elliott.
Same for Elliott. Here's the thing. Unlike most fantasy experts, I deal in facts. Out of the last 17 running backs drafted in the first round, only two have been top 10 running backs, two out of 17 in their first year. So I'll leave David Johnson and I'll leave Gurley ahead of him, and I'll put him as the next running back there. I think he could end the year as the first one, but facts are, two out of 17. There's been a lot of guys we thought would do it that just didn't get it done.
Oh, I know, it's tough. I tell you, too, from a gambling standpoint, teams with new running backs and starting quarterbacks never make the playoffs, Tony. Every year, that's always sexy, right? Oh, they signed this guy, they signed that guy. Now, remember last year, the Eagles. Oh, they got DeMarco Murray, they got Sam Brown. Oh, it never works out. Never works out. Okay, so as far as Jason Witten is concerned, here's a guy that is going undrafted in some leagues. You know, here's a guy that sort of people are like, well, he's 34. You know, he's not what he once was. He only had three touchdowns last year. I'm looking from a PPR perspective. The guy had 77 catches. And once again, he had a beautiful catch last week from Prescott. Prescott said after the game that, you know, he's always been a Witten fan. And it's amazing when he drops back and to look at Witten's big body and frame. And he's like, I love throwing it to Witten. I know he's going to catch it. I think Dak is going to use Witten. I think Witten becomes more valuable in a Dak offense than a Romo offense.
Yeah, the only thing they lost last year with Witten was around the goal line. Gavin Escobar was the target at the tight end inside the 20-yard line. So that he had the three touchdowns. But in the PPR, 77 receptions, put him in the top seven tight ends in fantasy football. So he's not dead yet. And you talk about Dak Prescott, loves Witten. He probably had a fat head when he was 12 years old of Jason Witten. There's such an age difference there. He has to love this guy.
I know, exactly. Witten went up, and Prescott's like, oh, I love throwing it to this. Throwing it to this guy. All right, Tony, we got to get out of here. Very, very interesting. That's why I tell people, though, don't hold your big money drafts too early, Tony, right? Everything changes, man.
Everything changes, and it's going to be interesting to see. We had a report Kenny Stills got injured in practice today. We don't know the extent of that, so it'll be interesting to see how many things happen this week, and you got to go about it. You know what? I like to get down on some of these lines early, Gabe. I bet you do that, though.
Yeah, you know what? I like this. I don't wish injury on anybody, but I took Devontae Parker in a fantasy cup. I'm already regretting it. So if Stills is out, that helps Parker a bit.
There we go. Stay tuned for more news right here on the Fantasy Sports Network.
That's exactly right. Always a pleasure, Tony. Thanks, man.
Hey, take care.
There's that Tony, the Tony Cincata with us. Great stuff with Tony. We'll take a quick break. Robert Littell from BlackSportsOnline.com joins me next. Game Time Decisions on the Fantasy Sports Network. We are live. Continues at replays weekdays at 5:30. We're live from 2 until 3 o'clock. All right, let's bring in Robert Littell from Black Sports Online, host of Daily Show. Great website as well. Ton of stuff I wouldn't mind bringing up with Robert on a lighter note. But let's talk about Colin Kaepernick first, and then let's throw Drake under the bus for supporting the U.S. Little League team. But not the Canadian team. And nice of Drake to tweet his support basically after they won. Like, even Little League, this guy jumps on winners. Like, it's unbelievable, man. Like, even a Little League team, Drake, like, you're watching a Little League World Series, and you're like, oh, look, New York's doing well. Let me jump on their bandwagon. Now, let's bring in Robert Littell. What's going on, Robert? Always a pleasure, my man.
I'm doing well. I'm here fighting a good fight.
Yeah, it's and you know what? There's a lot of fights to fight out there, man. But, you know, a ton of stuff, and I enjoy you guys' wrestling takes and wrestling perspectives as well. But let's talk about Colin Kaepernick not standing for the national anthem, and then, you know, I'm not going to really say there's been outrage. I think there's been outrage in pockets from the right, so to speak, from the usual suspects. But similar to, like, America right now, everything's split down the middle, man. And, like, it seems like a lot of polls are sort of like 50-50. I was listening. I spoke to somebody that was listening to Buffalo Talk Sports Radio this morning. They said it was 50-50. New York Sports Talk Radio, 50-50. You know, it's amazing to me. I sort of really assumed that the rednecks would come out, like, firing, basically, you know, wanting to crucify Kaepernick and revoke his passport.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a situation, it's a twofold situation. I think there are people that think, regardless of how you feel about what's going on in this country, you should stand for the national anthem because the anthem and the flag are for, you know, not just, you know, military people, but all of the good people in America. But I think people that even feel that way, when they actually listen to what Kaepernick's issues are, you know, you can't deny them. You can't deny that there's, you know, racial inequality in our country. You can't deny that there's police brutality. You can't deny that, you know, there's problems that we have. Now, does that mean that, you know, the country, we need to all, like, leave and go to Canada or go to, you know, the Bahamas or anything?
And no, I'm tired of Canada. I'm tired of Canada getting thrown under the bus here because I saw a bunch of people were tweeting Kaepernick, why don't you move to Canada? People acting like Canada, hey, U.S. is the one with the open borders. Hey, you got to have a passport and a reason to get into Canada. But, yeah, continue. I just wanted to get that off my chest.
No, I understand. It's always Canada. It's always either go to Canada or go back to Africa.
Yeah, exactly.
The people that tell me to go back to Africa, I mean, I was born here.
Well, you know what, Robert? It's funny because I was reading the tweets that he was getting, the angry ones, and, you know, from white blonde girls and stuff. You know, if you don't like it, move. You know, you should be lucky. This is America. You're lucky that you're in the NFL, and you're lucky. And I'm thinking, he didn't buy a Powerball ticket. He worked his way to get there, right? And all the, you know, half the people that are upset don't even know the damn words of the song. And maybe they're missing a part. It's the second to last line, home of the free. So, like, you can't get mad at someone for not standing during a song when the song is about freedom of expression.
Absolutely. And it, people that say leave, to me, when people say that, like, you know, those people that have a problem with, say, President Obama or anything else, do they leave? Do they go? I mean, Donald Trump's whole campaign is America is jacked up. Remember, we got to make it great again. So if it's so bad now, why haven't all the Trump people left?
Yeah,
I mean,
good point.
I will escort them, you know, out over that border or the wall that he wants to make. You know, they can jump over the wall that he's going to make. So that, you know, that's just, it's deflecting. And to me, that's a big problem, is that when someone is talking about a serious issue, instead of saying, you know something, let me hear what he's saying and what can I do to help, or I didn't even know about this, let me research it some more. People are just go home or go away or stop talking, or you should be happy that you're playing the NFL. If people were like that all the time, then nothing would ever change. Nothing would ever get better. You have to push back against the negative for anything positive to happen in our country.
You imagine if Twitter existed in the online world in 1968 with John Carlos?
I think if social media was available, you know, back then, the world would be a better place right now. Because what social media does, it allows us to see a lot of the injustices that have been going on for decades and centuries that we never saw before. You know, the stuff with the police and things like that, that's not new.
No.
That just didn't happen in 2016 and in the last couple of years. That's been going on for as long as I've been alive. But now, because you can stream and you can take pictures and you can put it on, you know, Twitter and Instagram, people are becoming woke. That's what they say. They're becoming woke to the situation. And people that had blinders on or their head in the sand or just thought that, you know, minorities were making things up, now see that, no, we're not making these things up. These things are actually happening.
You know, I was watching Fox News, and they're really, you know, sort of in denial, in which racism doesn't exist. But it was alarming to me when I see how quick the veneer gets ripped off. When Black Lives Matter, they were protesting outside of Cardinal games last year, and a bunch of Cardinal fans came out, and instead of, like, you know, debating or whatever, they started chanting USA and go home, etc. And I'm thinking, like you said, like, this, that is their home. They are Americans. But, you know, it's like sort of a white thing, isn't it, in which white people like to tell black people how to think, right, or how to act, or you should, oh, you know, you used to have it way worse, so you should be happy. Like, I've been hearing, anyone who's a millionaire should just shut up because they've been paid and they have money. Yet, you know, it's fake outrage, Robert. It's fake outrage. People get upset. They want to get upset about people saying things, and they go to the extreme. People should be more upset. How about the NFL? What's worse, Colin Kaepernick not standing up, or the Atlanta Falcons making $879,000 from the Pentagon last year to honor troops? So, like,
no, they don't want to talk about that.
No. Right. You know, the Buffalo Bills, Terry Pegula is one of the richest men in America. He owns the Buffalo Sabres and the Buffalo Bills. Didn't stop him from taking $690,000 of money that could have went to a VA hospital. So the NFL's so damn patriotic, they'll honor the troops if you pay them to do it.
Right. That's the hypocrisy of the NFL. And like you said, the hypocrisy of our society. Our society is, well, if it bothers us, then we should be upset about it. Well, if it bothers you, or if it bothers, you know, a minority, oh, then you need to go home, or it's not that important, or let's talk about something else. And that's a huge problem. Until people acknowledge that there is a problem, then it can't be solved. It doesn't matter what Colin Kaepernick says, doesn't matter what Carmelo Anthony, LeBron says, and to the people that are causing the problem, realize that there is a problem and that they're causing it, we won't see too much change.
My producer brought up an interesting point. I was talking to him about this, and he said, unlike Hillary Clinton, Colin Kaepernick actually took questions and faced the press. And and was very eloquent as well. It wasn't just, oh, I'm standing because, and that's that. he backed it up in stating Hillary Clinton is guilty of committing crimes, yet is still running for president. How whacked is that? He said Donald Trump is promoting racist values, yet running for president. How whacked is that? These are serious issues that we should be talking about, as opposed to whether an athlete stood or sat down. Do you think, you know, does it resonate in the hood, so to speak, Robert? Because on a bigger picture, I look at Edward Snowden. Edward Snowden sacrificed his life to tell people that your rights are being violated, and people don't care. If they had their way, they'd hang him for treason for the most part. And he lives in exile right now. You know, Julian Assange, it seems like people that even try to be martyrs were so shallow, and today's youth just don't care. Will anyone follow suit? Does Kaepernick have an influence on anybody, do you think?
I think so. I mean, I think sometimes we want to see, like, really big public, followings about this. I think sometimes with things like this, it comes at a level that we may not even know about. Somebody that's sitting on their couch right now that wasn't even thinking about this, and it's put something in their mind that they're going to, you know, make a change. And, you know, we can only hope that that's what happened. And, you know, you would want, you know, somebody big to follow up behind it, like a, you know, Cam Newton or, you know, Tom Brady or something like that. But we know that's not going to happen. So we just got to hope on a smaller level that, you know, this gets through to some people. And, you know, that starts a little trickling of change down the line.
And, you know, one thing, how about, what's your take on Trump with the Dwayne Wade? And my condolences to the Wade family. But that's the type of stuff that I'm talking about that's just insulting to everyone. To watch Hillary and Trump both argue about who cares about black people more, and I'm white and I'm offended, Robert. And for Trump to come out right after if Donald Trump is president means no one's getting shot in Chicago ever again. It's freaking ridiculous, man.
Yeah, and I think it's frustrating when you take tragedy and try to turn it into votes. Because it's so transparent. Like, you know, we're not idiots. You know, we can see that you're pandering and using these events and using anything that happens, you know, to get votes so you can become the president of the United States. You don't care. You know, politicians don't care. I think, you know, regardless of what you feel about, you know, President Obama, always got the feeling that he actually, you know, does care. You know, sometimes his hands are tied. You know, he's a politician. He can only do so much. But I always got the feeling that he actually does care, you know, about people. I don't get that feeling about Hillary Clinton or, you know, Donald Trump. I think they care about winning more than anything else.
We got to get out of here, Robert. But the worst pandering of all was when Hillary was on the Breakfast Club and said that they said, what's one thing you always have in your purse? She said, hot sauce. Okay, what the hell is that supposed to? I know a lot of black people, man, ain't carrying hot sauce in their pocket, Robert, man. But anyways, I got to get out of here, man. It's always a pleasure, man. Thanks for joining me, huh?
Oh, thank you so much, and I appreciate you giving me the forum to talk about this.
Hey, we'll do it again for sure. Always a pleasure, man.
All right, bye-bye.
There's Robert Littell, Black Sports Online. Got to take a quick break. We'll come back with a plays of the day. All right, I was told we got to be fast with our plays of the day. They told me I only got 45 seconds. Really? I could stand here and just, you know, give me a yo-yo. Give me a yo-yo. Toronto Blue Jays going to get it done today against the Baltimore Orioles. Going to lay to 40 cents. Marlins and Mets under 7. Indians and Red Sox are both like -190 favorites. I don't want to lay the price. Let's parlay them together. +130. Kansas City Royals are red hot, and they're 14-2, 12-4, 8-1, and all that other stuff. They just keep winning. We got them as home dogs, +105. We wrap it up with Dan Straley. Dan Straley and the Reds, man. These guys have won it. Last 8 times Straley's been on the hill, the Reds have won. He hasn't lost a decision since July the 8th. Hopefully the Morenci black cloud doesn't kill him. Other than that, you're on your own. May the winners be yours.